Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm so excited to be speaking to our guest today, who I've actually just a moment ago interviewed on our other podcast called Mental. So I'll include a link for that if you want more of our guest, whose name I'm not going to say yet. This week, it's someone who was born in Hackney, is an inspirational speaker, visionary coach, writer, actor, and producer, best known for her award-winning play and television series, The Kink in My Hair. On the outside, our guest was an overachieving, reliable, strong black woman that she was raised to be, but on the inside, the pressure of sacrificing her own needs to please others was building. And that element of her life is the inspiration behind a new book she's written called Black Girl in Love, in brackets, with herself. And so someone that I think for many is a real inspiration, someone they look up to, has been dubbed the Oprah of Canada for her groundbreaking work, increasing visibility of black people within TV in Canada, but also more generally. And so it can be easy to see someone like her and think she's got it all together and she'd have a straightforward love life and mental health journey and all of these things. And as we know, particularly for artists, it so often is complicated. Danielle's giggling away on mute. So please welcome to the show. And also, I can be the first to say it to you, Happy Christmas, because this is when the episode goes out. So welcome and Happy Christmas to Trey Anthony.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You're very welcome. It's been fun actually getting to speak to you. And then we've had to, obviously, because we've spoken on a mental health podcast, now we've had to like brief break where we're trying to bring the energy up and be like, and now we're doing the funny podcast.
Yeah, it's a fun podcast. So I'm excited about it to talk about all my dating life and yeah, mishaps, because God knows there's been some mishaps.
And we always start off with a story. So I think you wanted to tell me about the most recent relationship you were in.
Yeah, for sure. Being part of a lesbian couple, queer couple, I'm queer identified. You always hear that lesbians process things to death, that they're always talking. And it's a constant thing of like, how do you feel about that? And oh, what do you feel about that? And tell me what we should do. And then let's go and see our therapist and talk about how you're feeling. And then we'll take the advice from the therapist. So I truly thought that with the end of a five-year relationship, which I didn't see coming, that there would be some level of processing that would happen between my partner and I. And that really did not happen. I actually got dumped via text. The end of a five-year relationship was just, the processing part was, I no longer want to do this. Thanks. And that was that.
That was the text.
That was the text. And that was that. And I was kind of like, wait a second, we're lesbians. We're supposed to process. So where's the process in this? Like, aren't we supposed to go to therapy? Aren't we supposed to do something? You know, there's this running joke that lesbians will take 4 years to end a two-year relationship, right? But that didn't happen with me at all. And so I think that was a real rude awakening for me. And my ex said to me, which was hilarious, she said, you know, I just knew you would want to draw this out and be really emotional and you would want to write about this. And she was just like, I just don't have time. I just don't want to do this anymore. And that was that. And it was something that I really had to deal with.
Wow. So it sounds like you got caught up there in the stereotypes, but maybe to an extent she did as well. That you both assumed how the other person would want to handle it. And in doing so, maybe came out with one of the worst ways of ending it.
I think one of the worst. And I think there could have been a middle ground.
Definitely.
There could have been a middle ground. I think after 5 years, like, we could have at least sat down for dinner, right? And kind of been like, okay, what we're doing here. But no, there was absolutely no middle ground. It was just, this was it. And it was a text. And people to this day do not believe me. And I'm just like, I'm telling you, I could show you the damn text. It was a damn text. And that was it.
I love that you've got the evidence. Yeah.
I got the evidence.
And at this point, were you living together?
We were living together.
That's what makes it even weirder.
Even more weird. We had just moved into a brand new condo, two-bedroom condo, December 1st. And I was dumped December 18th. So it was just kind of like, So it was a hard thing. It was a really hard thing. And then, of course, Christmas coming around the corner and everything. And I had a brand new baby. And so it was a really hard time. But it also, I think, when this first happened, I kept going back to this place. I kept saying to people, oh, I didn't see it coming. It just came out of nowhere. And I think that's a lie that we tell ourselves a lot of times when we want a relationship to work. We'll say we didn't see it coming. And we damn well saw it coming, right? There were a lot of things that I saw that I pretended I didn't want to see. You know, we talked about red flags. And I think sometimes as women, we will see red flags and go, well, it's not really red. It looks a little pink. You know, it's a little hue to it, but I would call this a red flag.
I love that. Wait, yeah. You've got to get a point for that. That's so good. Although I will say, in your defense, you just moved in together. So I think you could be forgiven for thinking the relationship was moving towards progressing, not ending.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, that's how it works, right?
Yeah. You think when you move in together, you're like, okay, we're on the same track. This is what we're doing. And so, yeah, it was kind of like, oh, okay. So why did we move? Like, I could have really done without the U-Haul in this, you know, so, but this is what it was. Yeah.
And did you ever get any clarity on that? Like, was she thinking about the future of the relationship in a negative way whilst unboxing and moving in?
I never really got full clarity on it. It was funny. She didn't meet with me, but she did meet with my mom. Her and my mom were very close. And she said to my mom, you know, during the relationship, I was like 70% happy. And my mother was like, 70%? My mother was like, that's perfect. Like, who the hell gets 70%? So my mother was like, what are you looking for? And so that was something where...
I want to know what percentage she was looking for as well, because 100 is just deluded. Like, 90 is arrogant.
Yeah, and so I was just like, my mother's like 70%. And I was like 70%. But I think it really came down to, I always had this dream of wanting to start a family. And even before we went on our first date, I had sent a message and I said, I know this isn't sexy conversation before first date, but I want to know, do you want to have children? Because I had been in a relationship before where my partner had decided that they didn't want to have children. And I was, you know, I was in my 40s and I was kind of like, you know, I don't have that much time. So I just want to know, so we're not wasting each other's time, do you want to have children? And her answer was always, yeah, I definitely thought about it. I think I could go either way. And I think that was when the red flag turned pink for me, right? I think I should have really delved into that answer a bit more. So throughout our relationship...
Although, I'm going to pause you there, though, because I disagree a little bit, because I think... You were being a bit naughty and kind of trapping her with that, right? Because you've got the first date on the horizon. You've obviously chatted a bit in the process up to it. You both want it to happen. So I think there's also an element of, what were you expecting her to say?
Well, I think to me, and maybe this is what I've learned in dating, is that you should never expect the other person to react in the exact same way you would respond to things. And I think me, if someone had said that to me, if I knew I really didn't want to have children and I had not been emotionally invested in this at this point, I would have said, no, kids ain't for me. And I've met and gone on dates with women who said, no, kids are not in my cards. I don't see it. And I think especially as queer women, it can go either which way, where I think with straight women, there's much more of this belief that they are wanting to procreate. Whereas with lesbians, I think a lot of time you have to ask that question because a lot of queer women do not want to procreate, right? So that was something that I felt I needed to ask right from the get-go. And I thought honesty would have shown up at that point. And apparently it didn't.
Yeah, like I do see what you mean. I just think that's the kind of thing where you generally only ask a question like that in that way if it's really important to you. So I'm not at all surprised that she kind of hedged her bets and gave a vague answer to allow you to choose what you want to pick. Do you know what I mean? So she was purposely giving you a pink flag as well. Maybe, because I think when, particularly with online dating and like the modern day, there can be such a build up of chat that maybe you will kind of give a vague answer in order to not have the date cancelled. I mean,
really?
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't know. Maybe it's partly as well. It depends on the gender of the people in the relationship as well. Because if you think about it, if I said that to a woman before a date on text, I think that would come across quite differently, because she could easily show that to a friend and be, look at this dickhead. He's already deciding he's putting kids in me, right?
It's true. I guess it depends on how you look at it. Because to me, and I think that is just me in general, I'm the type of person, I think I function from this place of like, I don't want to waste my time and I don't want to waste your time. So let's be as transparent as possible. So I want to know whether or not this is going to go somewhere or not. And it definitely, the brakes would have been on if she had said, no, I really do not want to have children. I would have been like, well, let's not even waste time getting to know each other, because I know that's something that I want to do and that's my long-term plan. But yeah, I do think it's definitely gender, because a good friend of mine who's straight, she was like, I could never have said that to a guy. I think sometimes I'm honest to a fault. And that's what I've heard from a lot of my friends. They're kind of like, that mouth of yours and your level of honesty will get you in trouble. But I think, though, it also then sets it up is that you will know where you stand with me. Like, I remember many years ago when my brother started dating his wife, right? And she was his girlfriend at the time. And she said to him, I don't think your sister likes me. And my brother goes, no, trust me, you would know. Right? My sister will tell you whether she likes you or not. You'll damn well know. Like, there's no gray areas with Trey. She's a very straight shooter, right? So he goes, no, she likes you, right? If you're thinking, right? And I think that's how I walk through the world. So I expect other people are going to be that level of honesty. And that was a rude awakening for me, especially around that when I realized. But talking about red flags, I also realized in our relationship, my ex was a person who was very much a pleaser. Like, she likes to please people to the point of sometimes then feeling really taken for granted or feeling put upon. And I saw that in the way that she moved through the world, that she was about pleasing and appeasing others. And I think this was how we then started the dynamic of our relationship. She then appeased me, thinking I know this is important to her, and not really listening to her own guts of this isn't important or essential to me. And it wasn't until, you know, we came down to the wire, she realized she couldn't do it, right? So wow. I think there's a lot of things when you're dating someone, you have to also look at how you see them deal with other components in their lives and other people. And when you see that they have these pleasing tendencies, also examine that and kind of go, I wonder if this is what she's doing to appease me.
I'm making a note.
This is why I'm a relationship expert.
Well, that might come up as my rule of the game later. But no, you're right. I think that's a great way of looking at it, actually, that you've got to acknowledge your way of approaching things. It's not necessarily theirs, because I'm like that. I'm direct. I speak my mind. And so we would be very compatible in that way. I like to know where I stand with somebody, and I will actively seek it out. But what I've learned in actually standing strong in that and not filtering it, even when I felt maybe a bit of pressure to soften my opinions.
Yes.
The benefit of not softening them is that people can filter themselves out a lot of the time. So I really don't find myself to be compatible with people that are pleasers, because my instinct is to, what's a nicer word than pressure, encourage opinions out of them. One example of that that's obviously not relationship orientated is I've got a cousin that's a complete pleaser, and he's such brilliant company, except when it comes to what you want to do with your day, like where you want to eat, if you want to go to a museum, any of this, because he will give no opinion and he will be equally enthusiastic about whatever you say, which to many people sounds great, but to me, no. Because then I don't know. I could spend a week with you going out for, you know, meals when I stay in London or whatever. And I have no confidence that you have liked any of the places that we've gone to.
Yes. And I do find with people pleasers, eventually resentment starts to build. And you have no idea that this resentment is directed at you or is even happening, because they're still with this kind of like smiling, like, oh, it's okay. I'll do whatever you want. I'm okay. I can go either way. And this is something that I've learned now. I'm not dealing with people who say, I can go either way, because I do believe you need to have an opinion on something. You know, like, you know, of course, once in a while, you know, in a relationship, there's a thing called compromise. But if somebody's pretty much the way they move through the world is saying, I can go either way, I think it can lead to certain problems in a relationship, because they then start to please you and then the resentment starts to form. Yeah. Because they always feel that they're accommodating you, and you're just kind of like, oh, I'm with this really easygoing person, right? And they're actually not as easygoing as you think.
Mm. Yep, I've definitely come across that. That's another point right there.
Right?
And particularly for something like having kids, you know, that's massive. And I am a strong believer, I guess, in have kids because you want to. If it's anything less than you really want kids, I worry that you'll regret it, and you can't regret it as a parent. You know, once you've got them, there is no space in society for you to be like, actually, like, I could take or leave this kid.
Exactly.
They are a big commitment for a lot of years, and they will, all kids are challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely,
you know, I don't think that is something you can please your way into. And so perhaps that was the kind of point there where you were getting mm-hmm. serious about adopting, and then she'd gone along with it long enough, and maybe that was the, oh shit, I've got myself into something here.
Yeah, and it's gone really far. And it's not like you said, it's not like saying, well, what do you want for dinner? Do you want spaghetti or a hamburger, right? This is life-changing. Like, somebody can be easygoing on that and kind of like, oh, I can, you know, I don't mind spaghetti or a hamburger. But do you want kids or not? To be like, I don't know, like, I'll go along with it. Yeah, I could go either way, mm-hmm. right? This is not spaghetti and a hamburger.
And so do you think that was the kind of flags that you were missing then, that you were purposely sort of excusing or finding excuses for because you cared so much about the relationship?
Definitely. I definitely feel those were some of the flags I missed. And I also, I think I saw in my partner at the time a way of kind of blaming other people for things that had shown up in their lives, and this level of kind of, I don't want to say victimhood, but somewhat of kind of like, well, that person has taken advantage of me, that person has blah, blah. And I think my grandmother used to always say, never think that you're the exception to the rule. And I would say, well, did you speak to them or did you let them know this is how you were feeling? And they were like, no, I don't want any drama. I don't want any drama. And so I think when you see how someone handles conflict, never think you're the exception to that rule, because then it just becomes this huger and bigger thing. And I think that was a flag that I missed around, she does not like conflict. But when she starts to run away from conflict, then there's resentment that builds up. And so I think that is something now going into a new relationship that I really am going to look at, is how someone handles conflict,
oh,
right? And how do they express? Yeah. If they're not pleased about something, are they a person who kind of buries and suppresses their feelings, or are there someone who's going to say, hey, I want to talk to you about that? And I think I'm the type of person who's like, hey, I want to talk to you about that. I didn't like how that went down. And so I then expect my person to be like, hey, I didn't like how that went down. And then you realize that's not how people are conditioned. And so I think that's something now I'm much more aware of, that I may need to also go to that person as well and say, how are you feeling about this? Can we talk about this? And not take it for granted that I would think that person is going to come to me and say, hey, I need to talk about this.
Yeah, that's massive. And realizing that in many ways we're in the minority, being so forthright on this. You know, a lot more people are on the smaller opinions. People can have really strong opinions, you know, any number of other things. But when it comes to emotional issues, relationship issues, we are encouraged not to speak about them. And I think part of that is quite situational, that you don't hear couples well, you don't hear most couples at least arguing in public. And so it can be easy to assume that people aren't arguing in private, but that is the right way around. That doesn't mean they're not. It just means that they're not doing it in a shopping center in the middle of everyone.
Yeah. It's true. It's so very true. Very, very true. And I think another big aspect of it also too is culturally, right? Like my family's Jamaican. My partner, her family was African American, and she grew up in a religious household that was also very much kind of like about appearances and there's a way to do things. And so she would always say to me, oh, you just get so mad. And sometimes I just think you're angry. And I was just like, that's just us talking. Like as Jamaicans, we're loud, we're in your face, we're blunt. And then we'll say what we want to say. And then we'll probably make a joke about it and keep going. And her family was very conservative in the way that they dealt with things. And so I think sometimes, as much as we were two Black women, I realized culturally we were very different in how we navigated things and how we dealt with conflict and how we saw, you know, what passion looks like when you're talking or when you're expressing yourself, right? And I come from a family that we just say it like it is and we deal with it, right? And my mother and I are very similar in that sense of kind of, we're just going to say what we got to say and we keep it moving, right? And yet she came from a family who were very much kind of like, oh, we will not mess up the facade that we're putting out there.
Mm. And oftentimes when you're from a background that might on the outside seem similar, that can be harder to acknowledge. Yes. Because I've not had that issue when I've dated people outside of my skin color, because you assume the differences. And so sometimes it's easier to go into it assuming there's going to be differences than assuming it's going to be the same. Because that's anybody. Like that goes beyond culture, really. You know, you can't assume anybody's household was like yours.
Exactly. I agree in that. And I think that is something that we really need to have those conversations with people of like, what did conflict look like in your house? How were you allowed or not allowed to express yourself? And like, do you see this as polite or impolite? And I think you need to really have those discussions, because I think a lot of times, like I said, we show up thinking people are going to process and do things very similar to us, especially if on by face value, you look like you're very similar and have the same upbringing and the same way of moving through the world, and you make assumptions, and it can be very detrimental.
And so to fast forward a bit now, you've had over a year being single, and now you're dating not just again after that gap of the long relationship, but also now you're dating as a single mother and the lockdown. So how is all of that going?
Oh, dear God. It's just a hot mess.
I mean, I know dating isn't easy for me and I don't have the child element, so I wasn't assuming it was going to be, brilliantly. Honestly, I've just...
It is just a hot mess. That is the only way to describe it. I think for me, especially when you're a single mom and you're a solo mom, and I think I realize this about myself. I really love relationships. I love having a person who I go home to and spend my day with and, you know, have meals together with. And so I realize I had to really slow myself down. And my therapist told me this, right? Not every single person, and two, because I'm also a planner, like I like to plan ahead. And so I will be on conversation number two and I'm like, okay, well, do I see this person in my future? Do I think that, you know, we will be able to share a household?
Danielle's pointing to me on a muted Zoom.
My therapist said to me, there needs to be a gray. You can exist in the gray. You could just go out with this person and you could just have fun. You don't have to see them in your long-term future. And I think I needed to really get past that, because I like to plan ahead. And I'm also like, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm in my 40s. So, I ain't got no time. And I realize I do have time. And so I'm really trying to take that pressure off me and also the people that I date, because I'm kind of like, it doesn't matter. We don't have to create family together. This person is not a potential stepmom to your child, right? And so that has been really interesting to just allow myself to just have an experience without thinking that this has to be a lifetime experience. Mm-hmm. And so that has been something that has really shifted for me. But it's been hard. And then also too now, I think because I ignored a lot of red flags in my past relationship, now I'm just kind of like, oh, nope, I ain't doing that. I know what that means. Nope, I'm not doing that.
That's good. So you're learning from it. So that's important.
Yes.
But I just wanted to add as well to what you were saying about taking the pressure off and realizing that you do have time. There's situations where you can feel that pressure that relates to nothing, that you no longer need to.
Take your time. And that is what I have really been trying to instill in me, is that it's okay. You have time and you create time. And just being in the moment. And that has been something that I think, if there's anything that the pandemic has really taught us, is that there's no guarantee of what tomorrow can look like, right? And I think if there's one thing that the demise of a 5-year relationship by text has shown me, is that there's no guarantee that the person who you had dinner with last night is going to show up again tomorrow, even though for the last 5 years you had dinner together, right? So it's just being in that moment and appreciating the time that you've had.
I think that's mm-hmm. a great way of looking at it. And you've reminded me of another way that people can take the pressure off as well. You know, for us single people, very few of us are getting into relationships at the moment.
Yeah.
If mm-hmm. any, it feels like. And so there is a, you know, we might be feeling, oh, we got to get into something new. It's been a bit of a time. I've, you know, I personally feel like I'm in a good place to get into a new grown up, a proper relationship.
But I love that grown up.
Grown up. Yeah, that's, oh, if you knew some of my past. But that's not where the world is. The world's just the pandemic has decided for me that maybe I'm not getting into a relationship imminently. But nobody else is, right? So it's, again, it's another way we can take the pressure off.
Exactly.
We're not going to get out of the pandemic and be the only two single people left.
I hope not.
Then we're gonna figure it out.
We'll marry each other.
We'll raise a child together. We'll sort it out. I've always wanted to adopt, so there you go.
I've done it for you. I've done it for you, Bobby. You can just come and join my family.
Cool. And so we will start wrapping up with our rules of the game. So have you got one in mind on something you try and live by with relationships?
My biggest rule, and I think it's what Maya Angelou said, when someone tells you who they are, believe them.
Yes.
And I truly do believe that now. And I have a tendency to, like, someone will say something and I'm like, oh, you don't really mean that. Or no, you're not that. And I think if there is one thing that I have learned, is believe them. I believe that people tell you exactly who they are within the first conversation, but you choose not to see it or believe it or hear it, you know? And I think that is something I no longer do. I'm kind of like, okay, if this is what this person says, then believe it. And then the other thing is, I went on a date recently, and this is me again, and it wasn't going really well. In my gut, I was like, I don't think this person is a nice person. Like, I don't think they're a kind person. They then text me after and said, oh, let's do a redo. And I even went to therapy and I talked to my therapist, and my therapist goes, I think you know what you know. Like, this isn't your person. Like, this is not the person.
Wait, so I need context on that. So a redo. So you'd ended the date and it had gone badly. Was that the redo?
Yeah, it went very badly. Like, it just went pear shape.
No, I want to hear it. What happened?
Okay, so this is what happened. This is so hilarious, right? So I have to share this. So we're on the date, and when we're on the date, she said to me, I said to my friends, I showed my best friend your picture, and she said, this isn't really your type. She's not your type that you would physically go for. And I was like, oh, right? And she said, yeah, you're not really my type, But I said to my friend that I'm really just attracted to your ambition and drive. And before, I used to make all decisions based on just on physical. So now I'm, you know, I'm trying to be much more mature. And so I kind of went, what am I going to do with that information? So basically you're saying, right, that you're not physically attracted to me. And she said, no, you're not hearing what I just said. And I took it as, you're basically saying you're not attracted to me, but you're attracted to my ambition and my drive and everything, and I'm not physically your type. And so it just went very weird after that, because I kind of was like, well, are we doing this because you feel that I'm ambitious and driven and I can maybe make your life much more easier?
Yeah, is this networking? What are we doing here?
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Right, because either it is there. And then she said, which is hilarious, I said, well, what's your type, right? And she said, oh, I usually go for like Sierra or Aaliyah types, right? And if you know me, like, I look nothing like Sierra or Aaliyah. And they're like bone thin, like really long and skinny and tall. I just felt the date just wasn't going very well. And I also thought, I didn't feel that was information that you should give to somebody on the first date, right?
That's horrible to hear. Well, if anything, I'm not saying this would be a good thing to say, but that feels more like something you would say of why it wasn't working out, not this is why I'm here because you're not my type. That what?
Yes.
Yeah, and also, I don't know about you, but certainly I've had a lot of bad experiences where people have been attracted to my ambition or my lifestyle or my work as opposed to me.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is there's a disconnect because they want that. They don't want me. They want the success.
Yeah.
And then actually, they're, if anything, disappointed in me because they're like, oh, well, you're working all the time. And I'm like, how do you think this works?
And I think especially when people see you walking in your passion and doing work that you feel, you know, is, you know, you actually living your passion and your dream, people are really attracted to that. But like you said, they also don't realize, too, that also means that you spend a lot of time and a lot of hours at work. You're very driven. You're very focused. And to me, I also think that people then also fall in love with the idea of me, right? They see this public persona of me and said, oh, well, she's on stage, she's on TV. And you kind of go, well, do they want me who shows up, right? Because I always say to people, and my brother always says, people will be really surprised to know what an introvert you are, because they see you as this really extroverted person. And, you know, you speak and you talk to thousands of people, you motivate, you're on TV. And yet, in my quiet moments, I'm really the type of person, like if you wanted to say, what's your perfect day? My perfect day is just like curling up with a really good book or maybe watching a documentary on Netflix, snuggled up with my person.
Oh.
I'm not the person who wants to go to a party. I'm not the type of person who wants to talk to a whole bunch of people. I'm really an introvert. And I always say to people, I'm an introvert with extraordinary extrovert qualities, but I'm really an introvert. And so I find it very hard to date people because I think people expect to get the Trey Anthony they see on Instagram or Facebook. And that is not me. Right?
Yeah.
So when she said that, that was a huge red flag for me.
And it's good that you recognized it because
I recognized it.
I can't help but think if she's not attracted to you out on a date, is she going to be attracted to you curled up with a book having a duvet day? Probably not.
Probably not. Right. So, but to be like truly transparent, I still then went back and did a second date. And that was something that I want to kick myself about. But what I will give myself credit for, after the second date, I called her up and I said, you know what? This just is not working for me. And I said, I think you're great. And I think you're one. But I said, there's something off and I'm not going to be the person. In the past, I would try to fix this or try and figure out why this isn't working, because on paper it should. But I said, there's something off about this. And I do not want to be in anything that I feel right away. There's a level of resistance. And that was where I realized I had become a grown up in dating. because the old me would have been like, oh, well, let's just see and let's just try it and give it a chance. And I'm no longer interested in fixing anything or anyone anymore. And I've been guilty of that, of trying to always mold things or shape things in the way I want it to be. And so I'm like, uh-uh, no, it's either there or it isn't.
That's brilliant. Yeah, I had another point I was going to add and you've just bowled me over and I've forgotten it. What was her response when you said all that?
And her response was, okay, well, I thought it went pretty well. We could have tried. And I said, no, let's not. Like, I don't think it's there. Anyone who has to kind of convince themselves if physically I'm your type, then let's not. Like, I'm very confident in myself enough to know that I'm somebody's type. Like, I'm not everybody's type, but I'm somebody's.
And you don't need to be, right? We can feel this pressure for no reason that we have to be attractive to everyone. That in real life would actually be exhausting.
Exactly.
If you think of what that would mean. So yeah, more power to you. And you were grown up enough not to say, yeah, you're just not my type. I like people that are attracted to me.
I wish I had said that. I actually like people who are attracted to me.
No, that would have been the childish answer. And then for my rule of the game, I've been thinking about something you said of arguments, because I'm reading a book at the moment called The Ethical Slut, and it's all about...
Oh, I love The Ethical Slut, about non-monogamy. I've read that. I love that book.
So it's, a lot of it is, for the listeners, kind of questioning like expectations of relationships and the idea of monogamy. And yeah, it's just a really fascinating read. And one of the things that I really have been dwelling on from that is the idea of scheduling arguments, that particularly if you're in a position like you were, where you're the one that is more open to bringing up conflicts and wanting to resolve things more actively than maybe hope they go away or whatever other people's approach is, then sometimes you need to take the initiative on that. And so that can sound like scary or over-logical to talk about scheduling an argument, but instead it's just finding an appropriate time to raise concerns, you know, and not being like, oh, just so you know, at 4 p.m. tomorrow, I'm going to tell you about yourself. That's not what it is. It's you find a time when you're maybe both at home and you don't have anything on that afternoon that's going to, you know, make it an appropriate time to open things up, and instead lead with how you feel. I'm feeling a bit neglected, or I'm feeling that I miss you because you're working all the time, as opposed to leading with you're not paying attention to me accusations.
I agree.
And so that's something I'm definitely, I think, in the same boat as you on, where I'm one of those people that likes to air things out, talk it through. So sometimes that will mean I need to actively bring up an issue.
Because
otherwise that just festers and it builds up, and then you get in an argument at a bad time in a queue for groceries. That's happened to me.
Definitely. I agree. And I think it's a good thing, like, because I think it gives you a way to have a quote unquote argument in a very calm and rational way. And also it not be so something that you feel you have to deal with right now, right away, right? Because I'm also the type of person who I like to sometimes step back and to actually think about certain things and go, okay, how can I have done this or said this better? So I think scheduling something gives you a way to be able to also see the other person's point of view as well.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so we will wrap up there then. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And if people want to find your other interview on our mental health podcast, as I said, the link is in the episode description. Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.